Hi, you're listening to Adrienne Barbeau and Quality Time Broadcast.
I'm just going to do it one more time.
Quality time, video games, all the girls, comedy and bitches. Quality time, video games, all the girls, comedy and bitches.
Real loose.
Did you see my Kegel tweets today?
Did you see? No,
I found like 10 pictures of very professional looking women looking doing serious professional things, and I put I'm doing my Kegels on each one. Everyone got its own tweet. It felt great.
Nice.
Chefs and judges and lawyers and doctors and military women, and it was like I'm doing my Kegels. It's powerful stuff.
Well, that's good stuff. All right.
Thank you.
I saw a woman near a military base that I guess was a Kegel expert, and her big trick was she would shoot the ping pong ball.
Ooh. Yes.
And I wasn't impressed. If she could return a volley, that would be, if she could take a serve and
that's
send
thing,
it back.
Right?
You know,
and then you get a goldfish.
That's the one thing I want to see. I want to see a full-on dodgeball with bitches shooting fucking shooting ping pong balls and golf balls out of their pussy.
If you can
pussy,
learn to dodge a ball, like you can learn to dodge a wrench out of your pussy.
That would be... Oh, with that, well, let me just say, welcome to Quality Time, everybody. That is a wonderful intro to the show. My name is Eric Woodworth, your host with the most. I'm here every week, guys. Thank you for joining us again, all you Quality
Thank
Timers out there.
Thank you for being at your house every week.
Yeah. I just live here and convince
people
to come.
I appreciate that when I come in.
And the lady, that sultry voice you hear to my left, is none other than the very lovely, the very pregnant, Miss Kimberly Ambrose.
Yay!
Kimberly, how are you?
I'm okay. I had a fucked up day, but it was good. I'm here now.
You're here now,
yeah.
Right?
My Grammy got swindled into getting a new car, and then it broke down, piece of shit.
That bitch.
It's like all electronic. Kids, don't. We've seen 1984. We know what happens. Buy a 1952 Chevrolet and stick to being Cuba. They're fine. They grow gardens. They have old cars. They're fine.
People name that don't car ever Christine. Want...
Yeah.
Yeah. People don't leave Cuba on like floating doors or
you know
anything.
What? You know what? You know what?
Yeah,
okay.
But those old cars' doors did float.
Right,
modern
right.
Modern day
damn
car,
it.
You're fucked. You're at the bottom of the Gulf of goddamn Mexico.
That is true. You could fix your old car. And that other voice you hear is the man right in front of me, none other than comedian, part of the Laugh Finder podcast.
That's me.
And just
and
general
writer.
Great guy, writer, comedian. Give it up for Mr. Jim Meyer, everyone. Yeah.
Jim Myers.
That's so good to be here.
Oh, man. Thank you for joining us.
So here's
evening.
The thing. I would like to make this official. Mm-hmm. My apology for being so late. I did not know until I got into my automobile that Sykesville and Pikesville were different
two
places.
Different things. Oh. Two different things.
So I'm like,
it'll
be 10 minutes, I'll be there.
Yeah, Pikesville.
And then it turns out you live somewhere
balls.
North of Puerto Rico.
Yeah. Well, yeah, from you, because you have to come up 83 and this and stuff like that. Yeah,
I also didn't, and then the thing didn't take me up 83. It had me taking all these back roads. It was ridiculous.
It was probably fun. You got to see the lush greenery of Maryland.
In a complete panic.
Know?
Yeah, it was
they
fun.
They call Maryland Little America, because we have a little bit of everything. We
actually,
got
it's America in miniature.
Is it? Is that what it's called?
It goes back to... It goes back to National Geographic of the 1930s.
Oh,
call us American
fancy
miniature.
Talk.
I work for the Maryland Office of Tourism, and we're not allowed to say that for some reason.
Really?
Stop it!
But
you're going to melt the wood down here.
We have a copy of that National Geographic.
Oh, hell yeah.
It's a wonderful thing.
That's hot.
Well, that's sweet.
It's pretty sexy. Yeah.
That's hot.
That's how I meet ladies.
I wonder why they hate calling it Miniature America. They're like, because it's much bigger than you expect.
Wait,
that's what it's like.
They don't want you to say miniature, or they don't want you to say that you worked there.
They don't want us to say American Miniature, which I think is a great fucking slogan. Right. I shouldn't talk about this.
Vern Troyer is rolling over in his grave right now.
RIP, right?
Yeah. So for the last 2 years, do you know what our state like advertising slogan has been?
Baltimore, the city that reads.
Maryland,
baby.
Get it in you?
Almost that good. It was Maryland, indulge all five senses.
Ooh.
But we're switching.
Do they
it up.
Count the butthole as a sense?
I believe
because I'm willing
would be the
to indulge.
Sense.
Now
we're switching to Maryland. Be open to it.
Just
that sounds kind of convinced. It's like you're trying to convince that somebody.
Yeah,
something.
It's like I know that you've got a
listen,
lot of
listen. Right, just hey.
Oh no, we're open to it. We're open for it.
Oh God.
Maryland, open for business. Kind of. Yeah. Who knows?
I think if it was going to be accurate but still like optimistic, it would be Maryland. You know.
It's here. You know. It exists. You know. Maryland.
How many go like right. We're open for it, but like in a sexy way? I'd be like, yeah. Come in through Delaware, Maryland's back door.
Yeah.
We're open for it. You know what I mean?
Oh, I went through Delaware. If we're Delaware's back door, we got a lot of shit Delaware's to improve.
Delaware's Maryland's G spot.
That I like. Action. We're like in and then like around to the front. That's Maryland. We're in and around to the front.
Hey,
we're the G spot.
You're looking for a good time, head to Delaware. You're looking for a baby and a life, head to Maryland.
Yeah,
okay,
hey.
Guys. That's how we roll. I did a show yesterday, Kimberly.
Mm-hmm.
It was for something called Comedy Singularity, okay?
And this like it already.
It was something that was supposed to be filmed.
Okay.
This guy is trying to produce like something that will go on Netflix or Hulu, right?
Okay.
I go there.
Everybody's got a dream.
And like a part of me is like, I've heard these stories before.
A lot.
I've been on things that have been filmed before. I'm like, you know, I hold it at arm's length.
Of course. Right?
I'm like, this is never, I'm not going to be famous because of this. This is something I'm going to go do. Maybe
yeah.
It's something that helps me. Maybe it's not. I have no idea what
maybe
I'm walking
it's fun.
Into. I drove to this place in Montgomery County, and apparently they rented this studio space all day. Okay. So they had four comics before me. We were in the middle group, me, Tommy, Chelsea, Shorty, and Christopher Lawrence.
Okay. Awesome.
And then there was four comics after us. So the crowd that was there had already sat through over an hour of comedy, right?
Wow.
So 40 minutes, 10-minute sets. So they've been there an hour already and had
wow.
a break. Now we're coming in next, right?
Can I just, for the layman listening at home, the only thing that makes comedy more enjoyable to an audience is hours of comedy beforehand.
Yes. This is so,
it just gets funnier the third, fourth,
fifth
hour.
It's like if you had nothing but appetizers and then at the end of the meal, somebody was like, how did you like that Thanksgiving meal? Like, but it was just the same thing over and over and over and over and over.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So I come into this place and it is literally set up like a high school production prom photo. Like, it's like a black, there's like a backdrop that's clearly like hand painted. They were like, oh yeah, we take our prom pre photos back here and this is where we're going to perform.
Like the cut tinsel shit and like paper, but they twisted it.
It looked like it was clearly made for homecoming.
Oh,
like that's what it looked like. And then
guys.
There was a big screen TV that said like the logo Comedy Singularity. And I'm like, okay, cool. Whatever.
You know what's cooler than that? A background that doesn't change or do anything, but it's made of like wood. You know, something that like just some, I remember one of the coolest things about Comedy Central Presents was the random shit they would put as the bed. One, somebody got a bedroom. Do you remember that?
Yeah,
somebody
I
said
do remember
was a
that.
Bedroom.
That bedroom was dope though.
Why?
I forgot whose it was, but it looked like a giant bedroom
yeah.
too. Like everything looked bigger.
And
like
Louis
was
like a circus tent outside a circus tent. What was that? Like it was random shit. I miss that. That was cool.
I recorded my new 45 at Magoobies recently.
Right, yeah. Right.
And now, you know, Umar recorded it at the his downtown at the Creative Alliance.
Joe Square.
Creative Alliance.
Yeah, good spot.
And for the background, he got people to give him old pallets.
Cool.
I was like, that is the dumbest thing. And then I saw it. I'm like,
no, that's cool.
That looks
yeah.
dope
really
as shit.
That's great.
Yeah.
Wish
simple.
I'd just put
simple
some pallets
shit.
Up
yeah.
in the goobies.
You know who said I really like? There's a, there's some guy in Comedy Central years ago. He's like a weird Eastern European. It's like Dak Zimilakic or whatever. I can't remember.
Oh, yeah, Dak Zimilakic.
Yeah. You remember. You know what I'm talking about.
Oh, yeah.
But
yeah.
He literally looked like, his background looked like a stage in like Mortal Kombat or Street Fighter. Like it was like a
yeah.
chain link fence with like papers blown against it. I was like, oh, this is where you fight Cyrax.
What was Carlin's?
Like, that's where
Carlin's was like a graveyard with oversized gravestones or something.
Yeah.
And he's like, you know what the crazy thing is? At any point in this country, somebody's always thinking, how am I going to kill myself? I got to get a rope. That means I got to get a stool. And you're like, holy shit.
I want a legit water slide
yeah.
where kids just
kids
come
down
it the whole time. Like, that. Like, this is my life. This is what life is like. And this is what we're going to talk about
while
for the next 45 minutes.
You're singing about a fuck doll.
Yeah.
It's amazing.
Hey, kids.
That sounds very Gallagher.
Yeah.
Do you remember Gallagher did one where he had an enormous couch.
Yeah,
that he could
I remember
jump
that.
Up and he
yeah.
had like giant potato chips in it.
Jeez,
and a giant
I mean.
Remote control. Oh, it was wonderful.
I'm very adult, guys. Now, please, can you hand me? Can you,
so grown
can
up.
Can
right
you hand
now?
Me my stuffed animals over there? So I show up there, and it's kind of like a B-rated set. They're literally including the comedians performing in this little group. There's 17 people in this room. That's
wow.
cameramen. That's everybody. So a smattering of people
sure.
in this room. We get up and we all do our thing. But the funniest part was this. this guy gets up, who's, I guess, the producer of the show. Mm-hmm. He is supposedly a motivational speaker. He gets up and starts saying, he's clearly from like the Middle East or somewhere like that. And he has a thick accent. He has a paper like this that he's reading jokes off of to open the show. Mm-hmm. And they're fucking horrible. Yeah. I mean, these are fucking horrible jokes. They were so bad that the comedians that are all at the back, we can't help but die laughing. Every joke that comes out, we go, like a part of me was thinking, I'm like, maybe we're being punked. Maybe this is a big joke on us.
Sure. They rented this room. Who knows what could happen?
Because this is thousands of dollars that's being spent here. I mean, this guy had to spend like $6,500 to rent out this space for probably more, right? So we want, like, one joke that he said was like, what joke that he says? He was just like, they say that, like, you know, guys with pink shirts. He was like, there's a woman. She said this guy with pink shirt was here, and they said to her, he was like, you know, 99% of guys with pink shirts don't even want you. And then Alex Starr just starts giggling, laughing through his teeth. Right there. And he leans over. He was just like, this motherfucker, when I laugh, is going to say, this guy gets it. And he immediately goes, this guy gets it. Like that. We all die. We just die laughing in the back right there. And he thinks he's killing right now. He thinks he's absolutely
destroyed.
Quits
his job and started stand up the next day.
He's
no longer motivating people.
It was so awkward. But like, I did it and I recorded my set and I was just like, I got some good laughs for the smattering of people who were there. But I did my closer, which is about me fishing a condom out of my wife's pussy.
Classic.
It's a very good joke. Got nothing. There's a little kid in the audience. I didn't mention there's a little like 8-year-old kid in the audience. I was like, fucking, I'm getting quality video shot right now. I gotta do the heavy hitters. He's gonna hear the story, right?
Wow.
And so I did it, and like my early jokes got that. My closer, silence. Like, wow. So I was like, I'm gonna take that video because I acted like it looked like he killed. There's gonna be a laugh track added. I'm gonna use this as promotion, like, no matter what. I was like, I know that joke works. I'm never gonna retire. So
you should have looked at that kid's like, do you understand that joke? No, that's because your dad didn't fish the condom out. That's how you got here, buddy. Give it up.
killing it.
And I had to fish a condom out of my wife. Ooh, thanks, guys. I've been Jim Meyer. You have the best night ever.
My son's been telling both of my sons been telling jokes, but my little guy, this is his favorite. Maybe he goes, this is how he tells it. He says, knock, knock.
Who's there?
In a nucting cow.
In a nucting cow, who?
Moo.
Got him.
It fucking kills, man. It's all about the timing.
My daughter Jane knows a lot of jokes, and she understands how a joke works and the structure. She's 7. She just turned 7 last week. So
fuck, my kid's 7, and he's dumb as a post.
She understands how
bless
a joke works.
Heart.
That was my 3-year-old.
Bless
though.
His heart. But that's how the grandmas. You can say anything negative in grandma world, but you gotta bless their hearts.
Bless his stupid heart.
Right. Bless his retarded heart.
So Jane will tell a legit joke that she's heard. Like, how do you get a tissue to dance? You put a little boogie in it.
Hey.
And I'm like, killing
good job.
But the classic little one comes over. She's 3. She comes over. Daddy, how you get a tissue to dance? I'm like, how? Poopies. And I really die laughing.
Unfortunately,
like, oh, he got me there.
Unfortunately, funnier. Yeah. Funnier. Jane, take notes.
She has no idea, but you're winning at comedy. She doesn't know that she is, but
right.
She's winning right now.
Well, see, the little one is postmodern.
Yeah, right. She's very
honey,
old.
Honey, do you see how she gave up? Do you see how she worked so much less to the point that she gave up? Do you see why that's better?
Mm.
Maybe think about that.
Yeah.
Maybe think about that.
Think about what you
She just hasn't seen Adult Swim yet.
Yeah, she will. She will. She'll resent me. I can't wait for it one day. well, I don't know, folks. Are we ready without further ado
it's
to get onto our topic of the evening?
I did not get a chance to rewatch, but I have seen this movie probably 100 times.
Oh, well, you're
God.
In luck because
why?
Tonight we are watching 1985's The Last
Dragon. Are we watching it?
No, we're going to go over it. We're going to go over The Last Dragon.
Best Valentine's Day gift I ever got.
You got this for Valentine's Day?
I got the soundtrack probably 10 years ago for Valentine's Day. It was maybe 15 now.
Oh, wow.
And the best song on the fucking movie isn't on the soundtrack, which is Sukiyaki Hut Saki Su.
Oh, that's coming soon. And I did learn that because I was looking for the song, and it's not on the soundtrack.
It's on YouTube, but it's just the hook. The hook exists.
Oh, it's such a fun racist song that they threw in this movie.
But the scene is reverse racist from the, you know, because it's, we'll get there.
Yeah, we'll get there.
Here's
we'll
what's going to make this episode real awkward. everything I hate about movies right in there.
Really? You hate perfection? Yes.
I put this on and I said to myself, Jim didn't suggest this. This is a punishment from Eric for Six String Samurai.
So yeah, we went over Six String Samurai, and yep. I kind of shat on
that movie.
He said,
"Bitch, you think you're funny. You think you know Obscure. You made me sit through that, so you know what you have to watch."
As a kid growing up, I remember watching this movie a bunch of times because my parents would have HBO off and mm-hmm, on mm-hmm. growing up. Mm-hmm. But this is one of the movies that would always come on HBO, and when I saw it, I was just like, fuck yeah, this is on again. It's kind of, honestly, it came out 85, but I probably saw it like from 92, 93 is when mm-hmm. I got introduced mm-hmm. to this movie mm-hmm. a lot.
Sure.
And I remember every time it came on, I was just like, motherfucking Show Nuff and Bruce Leroy, let's do this right now.
I am not going to lie. I think I last saw this maybe probably 4 years ago. Mm-hmm. And even still, whenever he realizes he's the master, I fucking cry. I fucking cry. Wow. This is no shit. Like tears down my face.
Whereas I was thinking, boy, I wish I could watch this with Beavis and Butthead, because whatever they would say is probably what I'm feeling right now in my uh-huh. heart.
They'd be saying, this is amazing.
Well, maybe listen, Kim, that's what we need the fresh take from you, because you're coming into this the first time. You have no background with it. Yeah. So we're going to get an honest review.
Yeah.
We're not going to appreciate it, but we're going
to. That's fine. Yeah. Quite frankly, I didn't come here to be appreciated.
I appreciated you so much right until you told me that Berry Gordy's The Last Dragon is everything you hate. A Berry Gordy soundtrack? Yeah. Vanity? Karate?
So for those listeners who don't know who Berry Gordy is, Berry Gordy is the founder and CEO of Motown Records, mm-hmm. probably one of the biggest, most influential record labels to ever exist.
Yes.
Most notably known for, I think, The Temptations more mm-hmm. than anything, but founded
The Supremes.
Smokey Robinson.
In fact, Motown Records, the group that they hired to write these songs, they are credited with having more hits than Michael Jackson. You know, Jackson 5, the Beatles, them combined.
They signed Jackson 5. Yes. They signed Stevie Wonder, the Commodores, the Pips, Gladys Knight, the Four Tops,
was
the
I wrong
Contours,
about the Supremes?
Jimmy. No, the Supremes are right there. Marvin Gaye, the
All
Temptations.
The best stuff.
Marvin Strait?
Yeah.
All Marvin the best stuff.
Marvin Strait is great.
Yeah. Marvin questioning all the big Marvins.
Marvin in college.
Have you ever listened to a sexy song and be like, they could be talking about a dude in this? And they're like, Marvin Strait fixed that. He only uses women pronouns when he talks. Like,
yeah, just adds boobies for some reason. Just boobies.
Marvin Strait is very funny.
He's got a CD called I don't think so.
I believe this sounds as El DeBarge. It's got the blind guy that plays the piano.
Yeah, Stevie Wonder,
that one. I can't believe, you know, he's kind of obscure.
Have you ever heard of this little guy called Rockwell? Somebody's watching me. He's featured on here.
What song was his?
He plays one of. I can go find it, but it's not. It's all instrumental. It's all instrumental. Vanity, of course, is featured on the soundtrack, and as well as Smokey Robinson and a song by Stevie Wonder. Mm-hmm. Stevie Wonder has a song called "My Stomach Is Sick." In this, not a great, not
I
his
got
best
an
work.
Upset stomach from a broken heart. It's been a long time, but I love it. Yeah.
So the movie opens up, and first of all, I'm already 100% in, because it opens up with shirtless Bruce Leroy doing karate. That's how the movie just opens, right?
Catching fucking arrows, right?
Yeah. He's his master's shooting arrows at him, and he's missing some. He's chopping some, but by the third one, he gets it. And this is just apparently how he works out.
And
like
he's hitting one of those traditional,
traditional
kung fu wooden dummies. And then the arrows at that.
But then he like flips over, and now he's working on a speed bag. Oh, arrow comes, boom! Chop this one. Couldn't get it. And then the third one comes and he drops down on his back and like grabs it as it comes through the air.
Can I be
Yeah.
How did you know this was the blue arrow?
I don't know, Master. He doesn't know why he knows this.
It's just in his heart. It's just in his heart. It's his destiny.
His master then comes over and rips his patch off of him after he answers that way. And Leroy Green is actually very sad that he feels like he's shamed his master, and he drops to his knees. He's like, get up. You've now been promoted. And he's like, there's nothing more I could do for you. He explains to him,
I'm not your master anymore.
Like, I'm not his master. Yeah. That he goes, he must go go seek out some dumb guy.
Some dumb guy.
Yeah, the master.
And I'll have the cream of some young guy.
Yeah.
Already, apparently, you have.
And then he gives him this little medallion thing that he says, "This was once Bruce Lee's. Give this to the master, and he will take you to the next level."
I don't want to spoil anything, but any true martial artist like myself knows that to reach that upper level, your mind, body, and soul must be one.
It's really, it's destiny. Mm-hmm. It's you have to, all the things have to come together.
It's a way of life. Yeah. Sorry, I'm trying to sing the song.
It's a way of life. Now, you're a bit of a martial artist yourself.
I do black belts,
Jim,
in fact.
And with Hapkido, right?
Hapkido and Iaido.
And you tell it, give us a synopsis
That's
of both
That's what Steven
of those.
Seagal does.
No, he does Aikido.
Aikido.
He does Aikido.
Okay.
But you do Aikido, too.
I do Hapkido in Iaido.
In Iaido, okay.
Aikido, what Bruce or Steven Seagal studies is a Japanese martial art. Mm-hmm. Ai, ki, and do. Ki means like energy. Do means way. Ai means harmony in Japanese. In Korean, ki means energy. Do means way. And hop means energy. So they mean the exact same thing. They share roots, though Japanese people deny that they share roots. The guy who started Hapkido was taken off the streets as an orphan in Korea before World War II. He ended up living as a servant of one of the guards of the emperor. He learned his martial art after World War II. He moved back to Korea, took pre-World War II Aikido, because Aikido is known as the gentle martial art or whatever, but that all came after World War II. Before that, it involved striking and and he came back to Korea, and then he incorporated Korean kicking, and that's where Hapkido comes from.
So, like, Asians didn't know how to kick before Koreans invented it with them?
Korean martial arts are all about kicking.
They're all about the legs. They're Taekwondo, all about kicking.
Taekwondo,
right?
Is Korean, yeah.
See? I used to take Taekwondo. I fuck, too. Mm-hmm.
And the Aikido's bullshit, but it's fun.
Aikido is bullshit.
It's like phonics. It's Asian sword stuff. It's like it's Japan. It's like now it's always, all kata. It's not fighting. It's just learning, doing the moves.
Now I always thought Hapkido was always about throws. It was all Hapkido. That was all about like using people's energy against themselves, like to like throw
it's
them
like
places.
Judo.
Like in Aikido, if somebody swings at you, would take them and you'd throw them over there. In Hapkido, you would throw them over there, but kick them in the shins as they go by.
Oh, you get an extra one. Nice. Yeah.
I'm a big fan of Krav Maga because you get to fucking hit motherfuckers in the throat and pull eyes out.
Ooh, yeah.
Middle Eastern shit.
Yeah.
They were like, what do you do to just like cheat?
I want to know how to make that guy take out his eyeballs like Beetlejuice. Like,
Krav Maga like is basically what would have ended every 007 movie like 2 minutes into it. It'd have been like, oh, he's alive. He's not alive. End of movie.
Krav Maga, I feel like, was invented. Or like, why don't people actually fight like Steven Seagal in the movies?
They should just.
Krav Maga was actually invented to teach soldiers how to fight.
Yeah.
It's to teach people who don't have years to learn an art, it's to teach them in 2 months enough to like kill a guy who's not waiting for
to
it.
To kill a guy,
oh, cool,
yes.
Cool,
yes.
Tight.
It's for, they should just call Krav Maga, god damn.
Next we see
we'll edit all that bullshit about martial arts out.
No. I like all that. I like the way of the fist, okay? We got this.
The foot now, fist way.
Next we see Leroy hit the streets of New York. He ends up in a packed movie theater of hooligans watching Enter the Dragon.
I want to live in New York in the 80s, from a movie New York in the 80s, where like every race and every musical scene and everything like all existed in one room together.
Like, honestly, yes, this movie theater, you could walk in and easily pick all of the Power Rangers or the Planeteers out of it. Like, it's just a rainbow of every race is represented here.
Every gender, there's like the really tough Korean guy. And he's got the like cross-dressing girlfriend, and it's a wonderful.
They have a
thing.
Trans person. They have everything. You know, it's just a real melting pot here in New York, and that's where we finally get to meet our antagonist of the movie, the main antagonist, Shonuff. And we got a little audio clip here.
Am I the meanest?
Shonuff.
Am I the prettiest?
Shonuff.
Am I the baddest mofo low down around this town?
Shonuff.
Well, who am I?
Shonuff!
Who am I?
Shonuff!
I can't hear you.
Shonuff!
You ain't number one, Duke of New York.
Shogun of Harlem.
Yes!
What? That's how I feel. That kid, he slapped his forehead and he was like, Jesus fucking Christ.
What the Shogun of Harlem. What a way. First wow. of all, I mean,
well, Wu-Tang is taking, for the children.
I love that we have everybody all under one roof and listen.
And he's going
to
beat them all.
And he has to perpetuate the stereotype of black people talking in a movie. I mean, I hate to say it, but I mean, this is already bad.
The one guy talking during a movie.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I don't think he was the one. Somebody had already brought out a boombox and started breakdancing in the aisles.
That is true. There was breakdancing.
Before this.
It was very well-lit
Lest
movie theater.
Lest we forget the breakdancing.
I don't know if it's going to come up later, but Bruce Leroy's little brother, whose name escapes me.
That is Richie. Richie is his
who has the best lines in the fucking movie.
Yeah, he does.
Has a boombox, right? And this was a big thing in the 80s, what boombox you had. And he had the same boombox as me.
Whoa.
And so I got so much fucking, like,
pussy.
I got so much street cred.
So
pussy.
Much pussy.
Yeah, as a 12-year-old, right? I got so much yeah. tail.
Went through the roof. Well, Shoduff is actually played by Julius Carey. And I actually love Julius Carey for another reason, because he was in one of my favorite TV shows of all time, Briscoe County Jr. as Lord Bowler.
Holler.
And he wore a bowler hat, and he had Civil War pants because he fought for the North and fought for his freedom, and now he's a bounty hunter. Oh, it's such a good show. I've never seen it.
The Coming Thing.
Oh, God.
That's
love
my
it.
Favorite sound that anybody makes when they love something. They go,
God. Like, the sound level when every time I've ever finished, like,
It's a good head. It's the good head sound.
Now, actually, whenever I finish sex with the lady, I go, I'm so sorry. Like, it's usually apologies. Like, why did you do that?
I'll do better next time, and then you high five, and then you go to sleep.
I'll be better. Okay. Oh my God. I think there's something downstairs.
We tried our best. We tried our best.
Yeah,
five.
We did it.
We tried our
best.
My wife literally once went while it like I was like,
Jesus.
I'm right here, babe.
Jesus.
Right here. So, can I just say that Shown Up is where I had forgotten this, but you showed the clip.
Yeah.
He's wearing those sunglasses that only appear in 80s movies that are like shingles. They're not actually no glass. They're just lines.
You just look through the negative space in here. It's actually solid
not
plastic.
Helpful.
Yeah,
not helpful. You can't use them
useful.
To drive.
No.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's very difficult.
Yeah.
So somebody pipes up all of a sudden, and there's a kid that pipes up that said, "There's somebody that could beat you." He's like, "Who said that?" And so one of his gang members goes and grabs this little kid who's just like, "I know who could beat you. Bruce Leroy, right up there," and points him out. And meanwhile, they don't show this, but Bruce Leroy definitely looks back at him like, "This motherfucker right here, I'm just trying to watch a movie in the front row. It's the worst seat. Nobody wants to watch a movie at the very front of the movie
theater. I
already
took the good guy seat. I'll be the good guy. I'll take the front."
He already took the worst seat in the house, and now this guy's got to fucking call me out when I'm just trying to enjoy a cinema.
Only,
like, this
only
is
the
ridiculous.
Good die young.
But this is also the moment where we realize that the movie wants you to believe that Bruce Leroy is the good guy, right?
Yeah.
And that Shown Up, the Shogun of Harlem, is the bad guy.
Mm-hmm.
This is the moment where we see the truth. Because
yes.
A, this little kid gets jacked up, mm-hmm. and Bruce Leroy just does nothing. But the real sign is he's standing in the front row with one of those giant, like, rice bamboo hats that's, yeah. like, 4 feet around.
The Raiden
in the
hat.
Goddamn yeah. movie theater.
Right, rude.
With a four-foot hat.
Rude. What a dick. What a dick. Yeah. The people behind him don't appreciate that hat.
No.
Like, it's a fashion statement when you walked in. They're like, "Oh, it's cool. You see an Enter the Dragon. This makes sense. Take off your fucking hat now!"
We but can't they can't
this.
Say
he probably
anything.
Would have fought for that.
But yeah. they cannot say anything because he's in the front row.
That is true.
So
like,
he
what
already
are you
has
shit on
the
him?
Worst seat.
You trade seats with me. Maybe that's how you upgrade your seat. You get a big hat. Like, if you want to see this movie, you best to let me move back behind you, and then you just keep upgrading the whole way.
Mm-hmm.
I know what I'm doing at Infinity War.
That's
anyway.
Smart.
You're going in dressed in like Asian pajamas and a big hat. It's going to be the most racist appearance.
Sir, could you take that off? I'm sorry. I live. Please respect my view.
My head gets
I'm a big
cold.
Fan of Wong.
So, Shonuff has had enough, so he walks up to Bruce Leroy, and you get to hear this little clip there.
"I've been waiting a long time for this, Leroy. I am sick of hearing these bullshit Superman stories about the Wassa legendary Bruce Leroy catching bullets with his teeth."
Catching bullets with his teeth.
Foreshadowing.
Yeah, don't let it get to you. Don't let
catching
it get to you.
Catching bullets with his teeth. Nigga, please.
The secret awaits eyes unclouded by ambition.
What?
The
Those who are bound by desire see only that which can be held in their hands.
See? Now it is mumbo jumbo like that.
Oh, love his gang.
I never caught
it's like you thinking they the last dragon. It gives Kung Fu a bad name.
First of all, who's out there giving Kung Fu a bad name?
Yeah.
I like that he's already pinned him as like, you're giving Kung Fu a bad name by sitting in this movie theater doing nothing, eating popcorn with chopsticks right now.
Meanwhile, he shares a fucking wardrobe with like Shere Khan or something. What is this like football vest?
Yeah,
V-neck,
I don't know. It's,
wrap.
It's badass thing. What he's wearing.
Like, yeah. Like this guy's out in public. He's got like the longest black guy hair ever. It's very well kept.
I like to
a
call
lot of
it
coconut
like,
oil.
It's like if Michael Jackson was a showgun.
Yes.
That's what it looks like.
Yes.
It's
he
like
would have been the coolest guy in the club.
And
the
he walks up to this kid and goes, "You're ridiculous."
Like, first of all, Kung Fu isn't so hot that you can afford people to leave your group. You understand? Like,
right.
You need everybody who's like NFL people. You can shit on somebody who's the other
sure.
thing. I play rugby.
Hundreds
if I meet another
them.
Rugby fan, even if he's not for my team, I'm excited to see that person because I want to uplift the sport.
Yes.
Why would you shit on this guy? Like, clearly you want him to be good and like other people to be like him so they respect you more for
he's a
being
hater.
The best karate fighter in fucking Harlem.
Haters like, are gonna hate, dude.
It's ridiculous.
But there's a second bit of foreshadowing that I never caught before where he says, where Bruce, can we hear what Bruce Leroy says to him again? The little,
get up.
You want me to wind it back?
Yeah,
back?
Wind it back. Just
in their hands.
They'll go back
see,
just right before
this. Mumbo jumbo like, nigga, please.
Here it is,
the
here it is.
Secret awaits eyes, unclouded by ambition.
What?
Those who are bound by desire see only that which can be held in their hands.
See? So, clearly, show enough is the one with desire here. And he, Bruce Leroy, is the one without desire. He is the one who becomes the last dragon. Spoiler. But, where?
Damn it, Jim!
But you just ruined this 30-year-old movie for somebody.
I didn't realize the depths of this dialogue though, because Shonuff gets only he only his desire gets him only what's in his hands. Only his hands glow.
Yeah, that is true. He doesn't glow out everywhere. I didn't even notice that, Jim. You just blew my fucking mind hole open.
This is what people get.
So eventually, his talking gets the best of him. Two random white dudes from the top have enough of this, and they're just first of all, what do you, the one dude is wearing? Look, I'll see if I have it queued up. Look at this. Why don't you come down here and make me shut up?
What? I said, why don't you sit down and
yes.
Look at, this guy's wearing first of all is every bit of like. 250, okay? 250 bills, and he takes off this shirt, and he's got his fat-ass gut in a mid-riff tank top, like pink tank top.
Pink tank top.
Like, these guys are fucking later tonight,
and they,
you understand?
And they stand up with an air of, we're gonna hurt you, you should be scared of us.
Yeah, one guy's got some serious baldness working.
I'm sick of these black kung fu artists always coming in here ruining our movie.
I don't know if you noticed that the one guy's belt looks like it's made from a metal watch band.
It really does. I mean, it's a nice belt. I like it, actually. So Shonuff challenges everyone in the theater to come and fight him, and mayhem breaks loose, and his gang starts just basically kicking the shit out of everybody in the theater.
These two bears started it, though.
And Leroy slowly walks his way over the crowd and leaves very peacefully to get out of there. And Shonuff is not happy about this. Next, we meet Eddie Arcadian. Eddie Arcadian and Angie, his
muse,
his mistress, is basically his artist that he's trying to uplift here, and also his bodyguard, who is the exact same actor who plays in the movie Dumb and Dumber that punches the guy through the fucking telephone booth.
Okay,
he's fun.
If there's a cult classic you guys have not seen, have you guys ever seen So Fine?
No.
So Fine, a great early 80s comedy, and the woman who plays Angie sings the So Fine commercial in the songs, and she's like, So Fine is about this hot jeans trend where they sell this garment business is about to go out of business until they start selling jeans that just have the asses cut out and just have clear plastic over each butt cheeks, and they're called So Fine Jeans.
Okay.
It's a classic comedy, and Angie figures prominently.
I love it. I love it. I like it because she also seems like, well, basically the character Angie is supposed to be modeled after like a Cyndi Lauper type mm-hmm. from the 80s.
Yes.
There's some hints of Madonna.
I thought it was
from Kew Gardens.
Yeah, yeah. But she's essentially just trying to be the next pop star, and Eddie is the one that's going to take her to the top. And Eddie is a arcade baron, so he runs the arcades of the 80s.
Which worked out, but with his last name Arcadian.
Yeah.
Just to happen to Whoa. Be.
I mean, yeah, it's pretty convenient. That's like the guy owning Walmart being named Walmart, am I right?
That's crazy.
That's crazy.
Like Bill Bricklayer getting a job as, I don't know, an arcade magnate, you know? It would be weird.
Yeah. So they next we get to see the very lovely and at the height of her success in the 80s, we get to see Vanity on the TV, who actually plays Laura Charles
herself.
And
is it Charles?
Yeah, Laura Charles.
I've been saying it wrong for my whole life. I thought it was Childs.
No, it's Charles.
I believe
Charles.
You. I just didn't know. My whole fucking life is.
There you go. I got it all up there. So they see her on TV, and Eddie assures her that she's going to be the next big thing. We're going to get her on that show on Seventh Heaven. And The Rock, who is his bodyguard, is a little bit jealous because he feels like he's given up on The Rock's boxing career, and basically Eddie shits on him. He's like, you got knocked out in the first round, what do you want me to do, blah blah blah.
The great
blah,
white
blah,
hopeless
blah.
They called you.
Yeah. The great white hopeless. What a great line. Oh gosh.
It's no chocolate covered yellow peril, but it is solid.
Next we go to Vanity's show. It's live. It's a live taping, a live broadcast, and we get to hear the hit DeBarge song. That actually, this song got to number 3 on the Billboard charts, and was right off of the soundtrack, DeBarge, Rhythm of the Night.
Just come with me and we can shake your boots right away. You'll be doing fine once the music starts. Oh, to the beat of the rhythm of the night. A character so tight. I'm here about the words of tonight. To this song of all
Okay, can I just explain?
Yes.
Can I just explain my feelings? This is why I say I hate everything. Because I hate his Jerry curl. I hate the way he is jaw jutted out while he looked from side to side like he's some kind of cute fucking. This is what every parent wanted to dress their child as on picture day. And you go in feeling like a clown in curtains. And you don't know why you have so much hairspray in and why your parents hate you. And then you get the picture and you go, not justified. This sucked ass. His mustache should be put in jail for pedophilia. I hate every detail of this. I was born in 1988, so a 90s kid looking back on this is a nightmare. This is a nightmare to me.
You realize this video alone probably prompted generations of kids to get the laser background on their school picture.
Yes, 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 exactly. And you know what? Terrible.
I do want to point out this is a classic case of someone extrapolating from their own experience to the whole world. No one else's parents dressed them like Elle DeBarge for school picture day. No one on the planet was like, you know what, baby? I'm gonna dress you like Elle DeBarge.
No one else's parents put them in way too big a sleeves, which my mom chose for her bridesmaids at her own wedding. Way too big a sleeve. The puff sleeve.
There's a puff sleeve to Elle DeBarge is quite the leap. I mean,
I don't know. Look at his hair, dude.
Listen, I'm a big fan of the 80s, and this is where mullets were accepted at their prime.
I hate
the 80s. I'm bringing
a
mullet back. So,
I don't know if you guys know this, but Elle DeBarge is Spanish for the DeBarge.
What?
The DeBarge. The DeBarge.
Although, this was also a very gender fluid time in Vanity. Like, he looks like a very soft man.
Yeah, he does.
He's
soft in all the right ways.
He would play on Team Blouses.
I like that you could look at Elle DeBarge and then see Prince next and be like, oh, that's basically Samuel L. Jackson.
Right. Was he just cutting wood? Was he just cutting some wood outside, this Prince guy?
He is the softest guy I've ever seen in my whole
This motherfucker is soft serve.
Yeah.
But the mustache does butch him up.
Yeah, a
no,
little bit.
It puts him in a van with children. That's what that mustache does.
He would
does.
Be the most butch kid in that person in that children van. He'd so, probably be driving.
So backstage, we get to see Laura sitting there, and
her
manager
dance, by
comes
the way,
up.
Is so fucking hot.
Yeah. First of all, I would say I had two crushes in the '80s. Like before I knew what an erection was, you used to get like if you're like me, Jim, you understand. Mm-hmm. You get the pee boner when you're a little kid. Mm-hmm, sometimes mm-hmm. It got hard and you didn't know what to do with it, but you're like, oh, that's cool, that's neat. My two pee boners I got when I was a little kid, one was Vanity from this movie. Okay.
Wow.
I got a pee boner from her, and I also got one from Sarah Connor in Terminator 1. Okay.
That
was the first
that
set of titties I ever got to see, because you get a brief little section right there, and my 9-year-old ass was like, oh, this is cool.
She's got a survival thing going on.
I have little boys now, and they get non pee boners.
Oh yeah.
We had a talk with Jonah, my older one, about like, you know, dude, you it's cool that you want, we call them your privates because you do that in private, like mm-hmm. he'll like, you know, flick it or pull on the,
yeah,
he's
sure.
got a foreskin still, so he'll pull on that real good.
Sure.
And I used to get out
I recently
of
told him though, you got to choose either, like, you know, do that in private, and mm-hmm. he just turned off the TV, walked to his room. He was like, fuck it, Dad, yeah, I'm gonna go make this happen.
Okay. He respects the rules. He understood what you were saying.
I just didn't expect that one.
I used to I've been told is when I used to get out of the bathtub as a child, I would stretch my penis out, like hold it like this, like in a jerk motion, but stretch it out,
okay.
and then pretend to play it like a guitar when I got places, like meh, 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 and slap
in no
it
way
like
damaging,
that.
I'm sure.
Yeah, I don't know. It was fun. It
clearly
didn't help
didn't
it.
Damage. He's got two kids.
I mean, it didn't help it.
It didn't help. I'll tell you that.
So next we see Vanity backstage, and we meet her manager, who is played by William H. Macy, and it's one of his first
to see
ever
him.
Movies.
I think we also missed it, just a quick aside, that we the love triangle is established because Bruce Leroy's little brother is in the audience,
Richie,
and
is
clearly hot for Vanity.
He does mention that that's his future girl. She just don't know it yet. He
Who
says
wouldn't
it to his
be
little,
hot
little
for her?
Punk.
She's got no boobs.
Yeah, I don't know. She's
not
just
a boob guy.
She's very beautiful.
She's gorgeous.
And so you get to see William H. Macy. He plays JJ, who's her manager. And I think this is the only scene that he's in.
Yeah, he's only in one.
It's one of his very first movies he's ever been in.
Aww.
And it's his first experience into Hollywood.
That's cute.
Big jump off. By the way, also not the only cameo that's in this movie of a really big name actor. So
I like to pretend that William H. Macy's character in this is the same guy. It's the shoveler, just 20 years ahead of this. Is
yes.
like the same guy, and this experience with the evil Eddie Arcadian drives him to vigilante justice.
It's funny, Jim. When I think of William H. Macy, most people usually go the show Shameless or something like that.
Sure.
I always go the Shoveler. From,
yeah. So do I.
Mystery Men.
That's what I said. I was like, oh, it's that guy from Murder
one.
Mystery
yeah,
Men.
Yeah,
yeah. Or am I going to eat this sandwich?
So she is, JJ is trying to warn Laura that Eddie Arcadian wants his girl's video played on the show. And she basically looks at him like, motherfucker, please. It's my show. I'm going to do what I want. So she then completely ignores that and then gets lowered down into the show and performs a song, the theme song to Seventh Heaven, which is the most facial expression. If you do nothing else, go watch this movie just to see Vanity's facial expressions during this act, because it is like the overacting is so
yeah.
over the top
yeah.
during this. I was giggling like a little schoolgirl watching it again. She then is lowered down to the floor. She does that. She then meets the kid in the crowd who says, that's going to be my future woman. As she's leaving the set after the show, she's mobbed by press. She meets the eyes of Bruce Leroy as he's walking down the street, and there's clear chemistry.
Clear.
Right away.
Yeah.
By the way, we also haven't mentioned that the actor who plays him has a one name.
Name.
One name, name. He only has one name, Tymac.
Okay.
Like he's fucking Seal out this bitch.
That's all I can say to that.
It's amazing. Like, yeah. I like that. He has a last name, I think, in real life. It's like Tymac something, but he's just like, nope. Just going with Tymac. That's all we
How
need.
How many Tymacs are there? You don't need a last name.
How many Tymacs do you get?
There's
so you
another
get to
William
the
H. something somewhere, I'm
yeah.
sure.
So we see the sparks ignite. She hops in her limo, and we find out very quickly that this is not her regular limo driver. And it turns around, and it's one of Eddie Arcadian's thugs. And this thug who's driving it, does anybody know who the thug who's driving this car is?
Who that is?
It's very famous from multiple Martin Scorsese films, Chaz Palminteri.
He owned the restaurant here in Baltimore. Yeah. Chaz.
Dang. Yeah.
That's Chaz Palminteri. If you go back and watch the movie, he doesn't even I don't even think he speaks other than that he says one line and then
is
he gets
really
punched.
Him?
Yeah, it's him. Because I looked at it, I was like, I wonder if that's Chaz Palminteri. And then I went and Googled it, and yes, it surely is.
Heck yeah,
he's like
it was.
The main guy in Goodfellas, right?
Yeah, and I think his most famous movie is A Bronx Tale. He's the main gangster in The Bronx Tale, where it's a great movie. If a girl doesn't unlock your door when you open her door for her, she's not worth keeping. That's the most important thing you learn from that movie.
I have one thing to point out and one question here. The thing I want to point out is it's when he's talking to William H. Macy, like 15 minutes ago, she tells no. Mm-hmm. And then Eddie Arcadian calls him and she's like, she says no. Mm-hmm. And then 5 minutes later, he's arranged for her abduction.
Yeah, there was clearly that he already expected to abduct, right?
Like, no, I think that's how wide his web is cast, how deep the fingers of the arcade industry perpiate the 80s.
He's like Frankie Shop of Shop Records.
I always think of Eddie Arcadian and I always equate him with the X-Men bad guy Arcade too. He's into video games. Anyway, he's a mutant that can control video games and stuff like that. It can bring you into like techno worlds and fuck with you. It's pretty cool.
So I have a question though. This is for Eric because I know where you stand on this.
Sure.
But if you had to pick one 80s action vanity film, would it be...
God, just one?
Would it be The Last Dragon... Or would it be Action Jackson?
Ooh, Action Jackson. You know, I can't say I've seen Action Jackson more than one time.
Really?
I've only seen it once, but okay. I know whenever I played the game Time Crisis, it would say action, and I would go, Action Jackson, every time it would happen.
Cool story, man.
Kimberly, go. I know that was totally a question for Kimberly, and I bogarted it, and I apologize for that. You didn't deserve that. Okay, good.
All right.
As she drives down the street, luckily Bruce Leroy comes in and saves the day and starts karateing the fuck out of people. He quickly disperses of all the thugs with sidekicks and punches to the face and throws into the door, and before Vanity can even thank him, he hails a cab for her and then he disappears.
Whoa.
Yeah.
But then she finds something.
She finds something on the ground, though, as he's going off. It's the little medallion that his master gave him.
Oh, my God.
She, of course, having the wherewithal, goes and picks that up, puts it in her pocket, and then you see Bruce Leroy return a couple moments later to go look for it, and it's nowhere to be found. And he's like, fuck. I lost. Like, that's got to be like us losing our cell phone, right?
Yeah.
Like, that's about the same equivalent.
My
like,
mom is
going to
be pissed
it.
We don't have any more medallion upgrades.
How am I going to be a master if I have this sweet medallion?
Yeah.
God damn it. If I don't have this goddamn Power Ranger stone coin, there's no way I'm going to be able to do karate for the rest of my life.
So and I think at this point, again, the easy, hilarious racism of this film comes back into play.
Yes.
When they go
that's
to describe,
what your generation calls it, sure.
Yeah, where they go back to describe who they were jumped by. It's like, 40 big black guys. And then they like look at the one black guy who's like,
they were black as fuck, yeah. Yeah, so they back at Eddie's hideout, which I didn't mention this before. Eddie's hideout is rather chic in there. It's set up. It's got like a fish tank, and this fish tank has something that can eat meat in like 2 seconds. You never actually find out what's in it. It's not a piranha, or if it's like something, but it's just green murky water with something that can absolutely devour something in a second.
Which goes to show you the special effects budget they had for this film.
Yeah,
right.
they don't have an actual fish.
They made a guy sit in there in a scuba suit and just thrash.
Yeah.
Just thrash a lot.
Eddie assures Angie that Laura will be here and to fix her face, which is also a very aggressive way. Like, come on, Eddie, calm down. So
I think this establishes also Eddie is not a nice guy.
He's not nice.
Yeah, he's not.
Nice
he's not
guy.
A good guy.
Yeah.
He tells bitches to fix their face.
Now,
I mean, we got to admit, though, that some bitches do need to fix their face.
Some bitches need to fix their face.
Mm-hmm. Now, the next scene, we see Leroy teaching his students in a dojo, donning the classic Bruce Lee yellow jumpsuit. Also famous of famous from Kill Bill as well.
Classic.
So, but they did it before. They copied it from Bruce Lee before Kill Bill did.
Yes.
Okay, let's be clear about
and
this.
Better.
And better, I will say.
Bruce Lee looks way better than Uma Thurman in that suit.
I will say that. I would fuck Bruce Lee. I'd
Is
fuck
it the
Ty
nipple
Mac
holes?
First.
Is that what you like about it? Is the nipple holes are cut out?
Yeah.
Does he have nipple holes cut out?
That's what you like the most? And there's rhinestones around it?
I do like that. I do like the nipple holes.
I like that it has a belt where you can put his keys.
So
I actually bought a gi with a pocket for keys. This is absolutely true. Because it's like the biggest... Because you have to go change there. It's like, oh, if I had pants, I had gi pants and a pocket...
So Shoduff and his goons show up and break up the training that he's trying to have here. He challenges Leroy again, and he sends his girls after him instead. And his girls kind of go after him, and then one of them ends up punching Leroy in the face. And he takes his stance like he's going to fight, and then he realizes he's like, man, I can't be punching these bitches. Like, I put my foots down. So he gets back into his peaceful stance.
And we meet his number two.
Yeah, we meet his number two, Mr. Johnny Yu, who is Leroy's number two, who he doesn't know any karate. He goes to this karate school constantly. He clearly has a great body. He knows he works out. But he's just like, you don't need to know anything, man. You just make the noise. It's like, wah! And I will admit, amazing Bruce Lee impersonation that he does. It is spot on.
And I think he might secretly know martial arts.
Yeah, I would say so,
he's being
too.
Being humbled. Yeah.
I don't want to humble brag, but he's got some moves. He's got some moves there.
And then is the kid from Sidekicks in this scene?
Yeah, no, I think he's in this scene, but he's not really...
He's not featured.
He's later in the movie where you actually kind of notice who he is. At least I didn't notice him when I just rewatched it.
Did you watch the movie? Did you see the show Sidekicks ever?
Yes, I've seen the show Sidekicks. He's not in the movie Sidekicks.
Oh, he's not?
No, he's not in the movie Sidekicks. The movie Sidekicks is with Brandon something. He killed himself, and Chuck Norris. But he is in the movie Surf Ninjas, which is a completely different movie with Leslie Nielsen. And I remember him most vividly from that. But we'll get to him later.
It just bothers me that Sidekicks, Gil Gerard got top billing over this kid. It's all about a kid who knows karate. And then Buck Rogers gets fucking top billing. Yeah. Bullshit. Racism.
This little kid is a master martial artist, though. He's really good. Mm-hmm. And he'll come into play later on in the movie. Now, finally, he gets his goons to come over and tells Leroy to kiss my Converse. And Leroy's shittiest student steps up, and Johnny Yu, and they threaten to break his neck. So he goes down finally to go kiss Shonuff's Converse, and he gets kicked in the face, and it's not a very nice thing to do. You may not fight me now, but you will. And then Shonuff leaves.
I believe that Bruce Leroy is the only thing standing between Shonuff and total domination.
Yes, I like that he's like, this guy that doesn't want to fight me is the only thing holding me back right now. Look at that. What is he solving here? Like, I don't understand it, but I like it. I enjoy it.
Mm-hmm.
Next, we see Leroy at his house, and we get to see the kid from Seventh Heaven, we find out, is Richie, who is Leroy's little brother. And his little sister, who's actually the chick from The Cosby Show.
Yeah.
So it's a star-studded cast.
Rudy.
Yeah, it's Rudy from The Cosby Show.
That's probably what got her the role as Rudy.
Now, Laura comes up on the TV that's in the kitchen there, and Richie says, that's my girl, Dad. And then Leroy says, oh, that's her. And all of a sudden, a love triangle has been formed between brother and brother and a girl that neither of them can possibly get.
Yeah, but the little brother is giving him all the love advice. He's telling him how to make moves and so forth.
I like that his seventh grade brother knows more about fucking than Leroy does. It's so great. Like, he's just like, man, you wouldn't know what to do if you got this, sucker. Like, I'm smooth. He has red leather pants. I mean, he is a very smooth seventh grader.
He was like, listen, I'm in seventh grade now, and this is what I've learned. You do the alphabet with your tongue.
Yeah.
That's what I know.
Didn't anybody say that before Sam Kinison? That's where I learned
know.
That was from Sam Kinison.
As far as I know, that's where I heard.
Yeah, Sam Kinison's totally how I learned that. Sure. Totally.
Well, by your generation, people knew about the alphabet, but I really think that Sam Kinison was the one who introduced both the alphabet and the alphabet for the use in the cunnilingus.
So Leroy convinces Richie to take him to where Laura's going to be because he knows. Richie is a dick about it and makes him carry him on his shoulders. And,
classic
and
Richie.
Fucking yeah. Richie.
If I know Richie, and I like to think I do.
So they get there and he's just like, Richie, are we gonna wait in line? And of course he's trying to fuck this up because Richie's got an in and his fucking square ass brother is trying to fuck up. They're sneaking in and not paying for this shit.
We gotta buy tickets.
Yeah. They go around back and then as Richie's trying to work his magic with the doorman that he knows there, he then sees the TV crew, which is actually Eddie's guys. And Eddie's guys, he gets to witness Vanity getting fucking abducted and does nothing at all. It's pretty amazing. He literally just like, oh, that looks like a girl getting abducted. Hey! But they do leave behind a clipboard that says Arcadian Production. So he
the
now
perfect
knows.
Crime. Ugh,
good thing I put this vinyl decal on this.
Right.
The only thing that can lead him back to it.
No, it's fine. It's cool, you guys. I threw my wallet out at the last second.
Somebody take these Polaroids of this abduction. Yeah. Leave them scattered about the scene.
Lick the back of it.
So, at least now we know that Leroy knows where she is, and we get to see we're back at Eddie's hideout now, and then Eddie is showing the music video that Angie's has produced called Dirty Books, and I have a little
see
clip.
I also hate musicals, and this was just a lot of music,
and,
a lot.
Here's just a 1 minute of Dirty Books, which is the song he's trying to get on Seventh Heaven.
Yeah. What was that? Was that Rodan? I'll jump in for a
dirty book. Found your dirty book. By the way, if my mom had just handled finding pornography in my room like this, I would have been a lot. I think I'd be a much more stable person.
This music created Nirvana. This is the type of shit. This is like, you know, like Whitesnake created, again, Nirvana. Like everything went to like, what's the opposite of that? Let's go to Rape Me. I'd rather talk about being raped by demand, by question. Will you please rape me? Then this Cyndi Lauper jumping around. I don't, the beat, her fucking, the pitch of her voice.
Did you realize this is supposed to be bad?
It's supposed,
like,
to, be
it's supposed to be bad.
It hurts me. It, they
it's
nailed
supposed
it.
To hurt. It's
it hurts this is, me.
This is the artist's journey.
This is an algorithm of what, just what.
So
is bad.
What Kim's sentiment is definitely mirrored by Vanity on the screen here because she's clearly also not impressed with this.
My love
this
for
is
quality
not seventh
time.
Heaven war.
Yeah, my love for quality time put my hands on my face and was like, "You watch." And I was like, "Fine, I will."
So she tells him flat out she won't play it, and Eddie's about to do something real bad to Laura. Then Leroy just ninja kicks in the door. He's in full ninja attire,
which is so awesome, but by the way
not an art of kung fu anyway. I hate to put this, like, but he comes in full ninja gear with his face covered and throwing knives and fucking throws one right into, he's just throwing knives into people. He throws one at Eddie's head. It barely misses and he goes, "You missed." "I won't next time." Eddie answers back, "Neither will I."
With your head? Are you gonna catch it with your head?
And by the way, he doesn't mix next time. Ooh.
Whoa.
It's like two mighty moose in rut. That's so, what we've got here.
He grabs him and says, "You will leave Miss Charles alone," and then quickly dunks his head in the weird green thing in the second.
Can
and
I remember
his
line?
Yeah.
hot head needs cool water.
Yes!
So good.
Dunks his head in there, lets him up, and this thing that could clear meat in 30 seconds just takes off a little bit of his hair.
It makes him red. Yeah. It makes him a little red and fussy.
Yeah.
This movie has more lines that I wish I wrote than, and, like, fuck Shakespeare. Come on. Chocolate-covered yellow peril. That's the greatest line in movie history.
You know how there's a poster you can buy? It's for Train Spotting, and it's got the monologue printed on the back of it. Like, you should have a poster of this movie with just all those little lines sort of in the background.
I should have it tattooed on my back in case I ever get amnesia.
So you're going to have a long tombstone. And here lies Jim requires cool water.
So Leroy takes Laura back to her place where he gets his medallion back, and she cannot be throwing herself any harder at him, and he is just this dullard that just cannot handle any type of sexual advance at all. And the whole time I'm thinking, like, god damn it, come on, pal, pull one for the team, give her the worst sexual experience of her life and move on, okay? But
come on, man, reach that glass ceiling of your sexual ability.
But he basically ends it very awkwardly after he gets his medallion back, and then she calls it a belt buckle. He's like, no, this belonged to Bruce Lee, blah blah blah.
Oh,
it's not a belt buckle. Little does he know, we'll find out more about that later.
So okay. Much foreshadowing in this movie.
Yeah.
Like this is like, if you watch it backwards, you could, it's, yeah.
I like it because
artistry.
I like it because this movie's like made by this movie is written and directed by like somebody who has never seen a movie but has had it thoroughly explained to him.
Yes.
Like,
yes. This, you know what? My 5-year-old stepson loves stuff like this. There's clearly bad guys. There's clearly good guys. There's a lot of music, neon lights, shiny sweaters.
So Leroy, now with the medallion, goes out to go seek out some dumb goy who is the master, and we get to hear this little track. That
are you gonna show the video?
I will play it here, and here we go.
Oh wait,
yes, sock it to me, I'll sock it to you.
And the cops are pointing in different directions. Oh, nobody knows.
And then
this is so great.
He rolls up on the shittiest breakdancing crew you've ever seen in your life.
Like, yes.
So it's an all Asian dancing crew that's hanging out in
a
front
dance
of,
crew that becomes a gang.
Yeah, this is.
I believe the gang, the way over ridiculous gangs in Escape from New York now, way more than I believe this gang.
I like that. Like, they've only mastered the dance moves of boy bands. Mm-hmm. Like, that's all those hand movements. Yes. And that.
I think you're missing. They're more of a lip syncing group than a.
Yeah.
And I love that they've gathered a crowd to watch them lip sync in front of their weird fortune cookie factory.
Yeah.
And these are the owners and operators of Some Dumb Goy Fortune Cookie Factory.
See, now, a song like this, a movie like this, just everything that's happening here, this is what you see now when millennials get mad at older people on the internet who go, why can't I use the word oriental?
All right,
you know?
You can hear this little interaction here.
I'm looking for the master.
Hey, no masters here, dude. Ain't no slaves either.
So good.
Is this not his fortune cookie factory?
The master, he doing his wisdom thing.
I seek only wisdom of the master.
You want wisdom? You buy fortune cookie.
Take a hike, Koobies.
Yeah, baby.
Please, I must see the master. It is very important to me.
Look here, chump. The master don't see nobody. Especially no jive coolies.
I love the one guy in the mesh shirt.
The
see-through mesh shirt
for his factory work.
Yeah. I like to imagine it's not mesh, so it's just a man's nipples printed on that. It's like a picture.
You go now. Chop, chop. Holy ass, out of this place.
I like the irony of this scene is so great, just because it's these three Asian guys who then take the Raiden hat off of Bruce Leroy, put it up, and then do a horrible
chop,
like,
chop.
Stereotypical Chinese fucking impersonation to shoo this black guy off. Like, I mean, this is a pretty amazing scene, Kimberly. Kimberly, how could you not
appreciate
the humor?
All
here?
I can think is when that Asian actor got off the set and went home, on the drive, he thought, am I an Uncle Tom?
No.
Is that
not at all,
what
he's not, he's not portraying a stereotype at all.
I got paid today to say chop chop to a man in
but
a
he
straw
was
hat.
Mocking the stereotype, and the character did not fulfill the stereotype.
It is true. It's a lot of reverse. It's all reverse.
It's a lot
okay?
of reverse. Like, yeah.
All I know is that white people had nothing to do with this movie, so that makes me feel very comfortable talking about it.
You feel safe.
It.
We're like, safe now. Like that. All the lines that Richard Pryor wrote in Blazing Saddles, we can say that. It's fine.
So, now, meanwhile, across town, Shownuff is up at Leroy's dad's pizza shop. And
Daddy Green's Pizza.
Daddy Green's Pizza.
I quote this to my kids mm-hmm. all the time. They have no idea what that is. Divolivio Pizza to Daddy Green's Pizza.
So, they show up there and basically ransack the fuck out of the place. I mean, they completely tear Daddy Green's Pizza shop apart. And the worst part is that they break everything, and there's a video jukebox that's in the corner, and Angie's video comes on. It's a different video that's fucking horrible. Mm-hmm. And then Shownuff kicks it in the side. That's the thing he's most pissed about. He goes, I don't own that. Oh, like, so you're more the thing you don't own in this place is the thing you're
yeah,
most mad about. Because
he's renting it.
Yeah, he's got to pay for that.
He's
got to
pay for
now.
That. That scene made
to
me
Eddie
sad.
No.
The woman who works
Man,
there.
You tell
the
mom. You tell him to go. You tell Geico or whoever rented right. you out this motherfucker to go talk to Shownuff.
Do you know who the fuck
he's
Shownuff
the one that
is?
Broke it.
I'm pretty sure that they rent it from Eddie Arcadian.
Oh,
he's
gosh.
Heavy deal, man.
You're right.
He came in for pizza, but he was wearing these glasses that just had slats in them, and I think he just got lost in the scenery. That woman didn't do shit. The mom that co-owns the pizza mm-hmm. joint didn't do shit until they pulled the shitty lattice off the wall, and then she went. Yeah. Ah! It's like when kids have muddy feet and you're like, all right. But then they walk on the couch and you're like, I'm going to fucking smack you.
I like it because Mama's the only one that puts up a fight, though.
She does.
Daddy Green is just like, I don't want no trouble. Right. Stop breaking my place.
Don't
all
they
this.
Stuff
and
the brother in the trash?
Yeah. They.
I mean, my God,
Richie
it's so
steps
mean.
Up. Richie steps up his game, and then the one guy from the gang just goes and puts him headfirst into the trash can. Ugh,
we're just trying to make
dick.
Simple pizza here, man.
What a
we're just
dick.
Trying to pay our rent. What the fuck is wrong with you?
We see where Leroy gets his martial arts skill because Mom is hucking dough balls
yeah,
like a fucking
yeah.
ninja.
That was hilarious. They hit that dude right in the face with a ball of dough. That was great.
So Leroy arrives shortly after all of the mayhem, and his brother calls Leroy a coward. And he says, what good is all that kung fu if you can't use it?
True. Truth.
True that. True that. Now back at the dojo, Leroy is taking out some of his aggression on a punching bag, works himself into exhaustion.
He's
then,
mad.
Laura shows up. She offers him a job as her bodyguard. I mean,
To guard my body.
Who could I do better than a kung fu master?
I feel like you're skipping over an important part of this movie,
yeah.
which is that they keep bringing up by showing the movie Enter the Dragon, and he's working out to this movie. I have a rule with movies. You never put a better movie in your movie. Right.
Yeah.
Now
yeah.
that my point with this
That's
being
like
terrible,
Biggie, don't get high on your own supply.
Don't get high on your own supply.
I get it.
Like, okay, there's a movie called Space Mutiny, and in it. Oh no. I'm sorry. Overdrawn at the Memory Bank.
Oh good. I
and
was
in it, they keep showing the movie Casablanca. It doesn't make a bad movie look better when you have a great fucking movie in a shitty movie constantly. Literally, the motivation for this character is a better movie.
I dig that.
He's
All right.
fighting towards a better film.
I think it's a different movie. I think this is a postmodern take on the modern classic of Enter the Dragon.
You're saying this is in no way comparable.
It's also a cultural circle because Enter the Dragon has lots of music inspired by Motown. Mm. And then this is a Motown movie inspired by Enter the Dragon.
I like that this movie is basically the movie Breaking meets Enter the Dragon. That's
Breaking
what they tried
meets
to
boards.
Do. Yes.
Breaking boards.
Breaking boards don't hit back. That's actually Bruce Lee's biography. Which nice. My very fat friend Mike Fuel, we had to write a one-page biography as a thing when I was in freshman year of high school. And he, because he was a senior, was so far back, he was taking freshman English in my grade. He wrote the thing and had to read it in front of the class.
Wow.
It was called Boards Don't Hit Back, the Mike Fuel Story. And it was probably my favorite
wow.
thing I ever heard in high school. God bless plus Mike Fuhl. He was a huge, fat, hilarious man. And that was the funniest fucking thing I'd ever heard in high school up until that
point. Do you think he still has it?
I don't know. If I could find the Mike Fuhl Boards Don't Hit backstory, I will read it on air. Yes. I'll reach out to him and see if I can get him. So, he declines her offer, and then his dorky student, Johnny Yu, shows up and makes it awkwarder, and she ends up leaving. Now, meanwhile...
Jilted, in fact.
Rock and Eddie are having an open applications for goons right now. So,
stampeding cattle through the Vatican?
So, Kim, I'm going to take you back in a time machine. I know you live in a world where Craigslist is a thing. Where you could just put up a personal ad.
Sure.
Now, back in the day, you had to put out a personal ad for goons.
In the back of the penny saver, right? In the back of the unemployment section, the back of the city paper.
And not only that, it gets better. These people show up in a line, in a nice orderly line.
A lot of people want to be
And they're basically all mutants.
Yeah. They could all be in The Hills Have Eyes. Every single one of them. The original, not the new
it's
one.
It's probably more of a band poster situation. Like, made photocopies, you just tack them up.
There's a guy in the background that's never really referenced who's like 11 feet tall. He's like 7 feet tall.
Yeah, it doesn't
make
any
sense. And he's dressed like an Indian, like an American Indian. He's got like and he's got a baseball bat.
Nice.
And it's just like, that's his fucking shtick. I really want a solo movie about him.
This is making me think of Mystery Men more and more.
Yeah. I'm Baseball Tonto. Please respect my people.
Honky Baseball Tonto.
So
Pete crying Rose.
Eddie then
Hunky Baseball Tonto the Giant.
Eddie heads upstairs and talks to Angie, and he says, We're gonna get you
This is such a powerful scene too. Such a powerful scene.
And I think of Gladiator when I hear the words powerful scene.
This is so much more powerful than the canned bullshit.
I think of Sophie's Choice.
Angie's line in this.
I hear
where
the
she's
word
like,
powerful scene.
And yeah, from Kew Gardens and getting by on my tits.
Yes.
It's fucking genius. It's so beautiful. It is a powerful feminist fucking...
Yeah. So Angie basically gives him the rundown that, I don't want you to kill anybody for me, Eddie. And he's like, nobody says that to me!
This is a live action Roger Rabbit.
I like that he gets mad that she goes, nobody says I can't murder people.
Yeah.
He's fucking pissed
about
this.
God complex much?
And then she drops that line that Jim just so shared with us about how she's getting by on her tits.
It's so beautiful. It's the two lines in this that this one almost brings tears to my eyes, and then the final one does in fact bring tears to my eyes.
So now Shonuff's at his dojo, and he's busy kicking ass at his own dojo right now,
doing what he do.
Eddie shows up and brings over a giant briefcase of money, wearing a hairpiece for no reason, because this hasn't happened any time in the movie before. But he's just like, I'm going to meet the Shogun of Harlem. I gotta put on my best face.
Yeah.
And he's dressed like in a casino style fucking like gnarly ass like cowboy suit. Like,
sure.
It's retarded what he's wearing. So he gets up there, hands him a briefcase of money, opens it up, and he goes, I don't need that money. Just get him there at the designated time at the designated place.
Shit.
Oh.
And I will designate his ass or something that.
I'll designate his ass to an ass whooping or something along those lines. It's pretty fucking gnarly though. So Leroy goes back to meet Laura, says that he will be her bodyguard, but first he has a mission. As they drive out, he tries to explain to her the power of the glow. And he tells Laura that he wants to teach a friend some moves, quote unquote, aka the art of lovemaking. And it's very clear that he's talking about himself, and he just wants to learn how to fuck, and he doesn't know how to fuck. And she immediately says, I'd love to show you some moves. Oh, he goes, oh, it's for my friend. By the way, you've sealed the deal. Now you're trying to fuck yourself.
I feel like
you've
this
done
is
the worst possible thing you could have done, and now you're trying to backpedal after she's basically agreed to have sex with your weird ass.
This made me think that all the people in this movie are like third generation from the people in the movie Sleepers.
Okay.
Like they're their kids, because in Sleepers they don't actually fuck each other. They just like touch an orb that makes them orgasm, and they kind of are around each other, but they're never really fucking. It's like uncomfortable. So at this point, it's kind of the same thing. It's kind of like she's like, I would love to teach you for just learning purposes. And he's like, I'm slightly uncomfortable with that. Maybe we don't.
So Leroy goes.
Maybe he wants her to show a friend and he'll watch and then he'll pretend he knew that shit all along.
Everybody will be like, I wrote that. In. I wrote that.
So
she's doing the thing that I do.
Yeah.
So next we see they go back to the Seventh Heaven studio and we get to hear probably my favorite song by the master Willie Hutch, and I love me some Willie Hutch. She basically cues up a music video just for her and him, and there's nothing that's going to get this fucking hot martial artist wetter than if I show him a montage of Bruce Lee and then play
my pussy isn't doing
some
it.
Good old Willie Hutch.
Can I?
The whole time a Bruce Lee montage is playing it's on the screen. And he loves it.
He loves it.
He could not ignore her more.
No, yeah.
Part.
Yeah.
He's like, he's air kicking and stuff. But I think this is when he really falls in love with her.
Yeah. Well, this is the thing. He's watching this whole thing, and vanity is slowly getting closer and closer. This being of 80s sexuality is inches from him. He can't take his eyes off Bruce Lee.
No.
And then she finally makes the move and kisses him, and then he still doesn't know what to do until Bruce Lee is on the screen and he sees Bruce Lee kiss a girl. He's like, I now know what to do. And right. now he makes his move. Like, how dedicated do you have to be to a martial art that you have to see Bruce Lee
again,
do
again, everything
first?
Fueling this movie is a better movie.
God, what kind of weird porn did she have to make to get him to fuck first? You understand? Like, she had to hire the three weird Chinese breakdancers to dress up in yellow jumpsuits and start fucking people before he could even go in on her.
I had to get my martial arts teacher to come on my wedding night and bang a hooker in the next bed. So that's the only way I knew what to do.
I bought him a Russian bride.
So. I have to say, as a kid, I think it's like Bruce Lee is doing like one of these kind of things
in the
end, where and he turns into a flower.
Oh,
it's
yeah,
fucking
it's
majestic.
Dope.
It's
majestic. I like to think like their kids were like, Mom, Dad, how did you like get together? How'd you fall in love? And she was like, Well, I rented an auditorium and then I set up this projector system. The audio, a bitch, took 2.5 hours. I did not allot enough time for that, but I made it happen. I played his song. I got a light system going. The fog machine fucked up. I tried. The fog machine fucked up. I played him his favorite video, and they're like, when's the part when Dad's like, hey, I love you. I want to dedicate my life to you. And she's like, nope. I literally put my body on him physically, and it wasn't until Bruce Lee showed him how to kiss that your father made it. Kind of start to happen.
It's that old traditional story.
And classic boy beats girl. Yeah,
I ran afoul of an arcade magic mandate. Dad was on a quest for wisdom.
You know how these old things happen.
So, of course, during this whole time, Richie is up in the rafters and he sees it and he is not happy.
He's heartbroken.
He's heartbroken. He feels betrayed by his brother. He feels betrayed by his girl that showed him no interest at all.
Why isn't she seducing me while I ignore her?
Yeah. Oh, God. So while that happens, meanwhile on the video screen, all of a sudden he sees a part from The Chinese Connection, another Bruce Lee film, where Bruce Lee is dressed as a guy who's fixing the that works for the telephone company, which is just glasses, you understand?
Yep.
And he immediately goes, a disguise, that's what I need. So now he knows what to do when he goes back to some dumb goy's Chinese the cookie factory, so he can get in and go meet the master. So he's like, okay, now I know what to do. So he leaves. By the way, he's just kissed his first girl, okay? This is clearly his first sexual experience. He's just like, nope, I just learned about disguises just now.
You know what's more important? Yeah.
I gotta go. Listen, fucking can wait. I gotta get the fuck out of here because I just learned that a piece like glasses can get me into a place that I need to go.
Because if we know anything about women, it's that when they throw themselves at you and you leave, they'll totally still want you tomorrow.
Exactly.
When I was still in Oregon, I had like three or four. There's this girl who's at one of my shows, and she was so hot, and I was killing. I did like every fucking punchline to her, and like I could tell like there was sparks, mm-hmm. right? And so I set myself up so she had to like walk by me as she left. And I'm sure she's gonna stop and talk, but she doesn't, right? And then I went like, hey, and then, anyway, I'm going on a couple dates, but I was such a fucking like Bruce Leroy, another martial arts master like myself. I wasn't forward enough. And so it was like our fourth date, right? And I hadn't kissed her yet. And so I walk her back to her car, right? She sits down in her car, she puts her shit down, she gets back up and she leans in like she's gonna kiss me. I lean in like I'm gonna kiss her back, but I got nervous that I was being too forward. I shit you not, I took a step back and saluted her.
Wow.
If I had a line like permission to come aboard, but the next day she called and was like, yeah, I think I'm done. Yeah. I think I'm done.
But I gave you four of my favorite Pokemon cards.
Yeah.
I don't understand. I thought we were building something here.
I still kick myself about that.
So Leroy leaves, and next we see Eddie just appear out of nowhere. He goes, we meet again, Miss Charles. Richie goes from the top and goes, get your hands off my woman. Eddie laughs as he abducts Vanity for the second time in this film.
Ugh. She's third so time. Thin. It's so easy to kidnap her.
This is the third
time.
One was an attempt, but this is the second successful attempt.
The weird thing about the first one, if I remember correctly, he's got her in the car, and they pull over and let her out of the car to shove her back in the car.
It's not a good kidnap.
It's not a good plan.
I like that she's like, I've already been abducted once, attempted another time. I'm going to hire this random dude who's going to do a shitty job at not getting me abducted and hire him.
Did she hire another guy?
There's no other guy that she hired at all. It was just Bruce Leroy.
I have an idea. Let's rob a bank. But this bag of money is so heavy. Why don't we leave it here in this vault and tell them we have all their money? See where that gets
Hold
us.
Hold it hostage.
Hey, we have your money. I mean, you have it. But we have it.
So Leroy heads back to some dumb goy and dressed as a pizza man, and he's working on his best black accent that he can, and it's pretty funny as he walks in.
Do we have a clip?
No clip for this part. No clip for this part. We got to move the show along here. They talk it over. They decide to let him in and play craps with them, and they play some fun gambling games or just having the time of their life. And then he comes in with a pizza with bean sprouts on it, which is a horrible pizza. Why?
I also love that, like, do you know craps? He's like, craps. And there's like this close up, and he's like, And then I believe he has them doing hopscotch.
Yes, they're playing hopscotch
with the dice.
Oh, it's so fun. He comes up with a very bizarre game for them to play. But listen, if it's one thing I've learned from The Deer Hunter, is that Asians love gambling. So they'll bet on anything. They'll bet on anything. So after a while, they agree to let him play. Now they switch back to Angie, and Angie's over at Leroy's dojo and finds Johnny Yu. She's trying to warn Johnny that Leroy should stay away from Seventh Heaven because Eddie's there and he's going crazy.
just sounds like Roger Rabbit to me.
It sounds like he's going crazy. Right. Don't you understand?
So, is this where she says one of my other favorite lines, where are you going? Elocution school. And he's like, why? And
it's fun.
It kills me. Fun.
So she can learn to elocute, obviously.
A lot of stuff happens as they move the script along here. Back at Seventh Heaven, Eddie is now setting up his mainstay at the Seventh Heaven set. And he's got all his goons there, and he's got Laura tied up. All of a sudden, he puts on a video and sees some other random girl up there. He's like, who's that girl? Does she have a manager? So he's already looking for his next management role. Because, you know, the way to be a giant crime syndicate, own arcades and find untapped talent. that's all he looks for.
Because there's nothing troublesome or going to cause you problems like a spoiled underage girl who wants to be famous.
Yes.
Nothing could go wrong.
So he's drunk with power. Now back at some dumb goy, Leroy is finally getting fed up with playing games. They basically play a trick on him and get him out of the place and try to lock the door on him. He jump kicks it back in because if it's one thing he has the power of, it's to fucking kick in doors. He's done it once. He uses the power again, and they take him over to the master, and he finds out that the master is nothing but a computer that's just coming up with all of these fucking Chinese riddles that they're putting on little pieces of paper that he is taking as the fucking Bible this whole time. So shaken, distraught, he goes back to go find his master.
Wait, eat, pray, love is not a way of life? Stop it. What?
So He goes back to go find his master to get an answer. This time he goes back and then decides that he needs to go fight Shonuff at this point. So he goes back to his dojo, finds Eddie there, and he goes, "Hey, you can't go up there, blah, blah, blah. Don't do that." And so he tells him that he has to go. He locks Johnny Yu in his war chest of materials that he has. And Johnny Yu is now locked up because he wanted to help. But now Leroy's is like, nah, dude, this is a fucking solo mission.
Has he already gone to his master again?
I guess I only made it like one line. But yes, he goes back to his master. His master basically tells him that he was just like, you will find who the master is. You know it. He keeps it very vague. And he goes to meet him on his giant barge.
Pulled some Yoda shit.
But he's like,
you
opened
a fortune cookie with no fortune.
Yeah. That should be enough for you. Yeah. He won't just tell him that
pulled the
answer.
Fortune out.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. He does give him the blank fortune cookie. And he was just like, I don't understand.
Some
like
Julius
how?
Caesar shit.
He's like, this guy doesn't understand how to fuck. He doesn't understand the very simplest of riddles. Like how much spoon feeding do you have to give him till he gets
maybe
it?
He's the second to last dragon. Maybe we fuck up. Maybe we jump the gun.
No, he loads up on all that stuff, and then Leroy rushes back to his old master. He asks him, why is he sent him to go find this man that doesn't exist? Oh, that wasn't the master you were seeking. There is no some dumb goy. It is a computer. Why have you done this?
Jesus.
Then he hands him an empty fortune cookie and tells him to for the answer that he seeks, you already have. There.
Oh, that's so the secret,
master.
You guys. That's so the secret.
This is why this movie is so powerful.
So he heads over to Seventh Heaven, and Eddie sees Leroy sneaking in on the security camera. Another kid student, they do a cutscene, and another kid student who is actually a very famous martial artist named Ernie Reyes Jr., famous from Surf Ninjas, and Red Sonja. He was in Red Sonja this very same year as well.
Isn't he like Darth Maul?
No, that's a different guy. I forget his name offhand. That's the same guy who plays Toad from the X-Men. Mm. Not the same guy. No, this is Ernie Reyes. He actually played Donatello, I think, in the Ninja Turtles movies.
Holler at your girl. That's what I'm talking about.
I don't like to brag with all my movie knowledge, but... the kid student releases him, and they are now on their way to go help out with the situation. Leroy walks into the set, and it's a giant screen. Eddie's face pops up, and he's surrounded by the baddest thugs that you could find on that world's open wanted list. So,
have you ever seen the MTT produced show Motor Week? Motor Week.
No, I can't.
It's a car show. Anyway, then forget it. Okay. They use the same pan technique on him, like with the in and out on his face.
All right, nice. So Eddie makes easy, or I'm sorry, Leroy makes easy work of most of the thugs, except for Goliath, who's this big dude who basically body slams him a couple of times. But just as Leroy is pinned down, his students come in full force, like his whole dojo of people come in and they start fucking kicking ass. And this is where the little kid from Surf Ninjas really shines, because he's fucking awesome. He starts fucking jumping off places, doing sidekicks, fucking doing everything. You find out Johnny Yu is actually kind of a badass because he's doing all his fake Bruce Lee shit, and then actually starts hitting people with it. And you're like,
I just want to see one person do karate and then like have a skip it. Be doing a skip it. I'd be like, they know everything.
So the little kid is shutting shit down. Eddie sees that his goons are losing, and he makes a hasty retreat out of there. Meanwhile, Richie, who was tied up this whole time, uses the robot to slip out of ropes.
Yeah.
So he basically dances the robot and like, this will get me out of my shackles.
Wait. You're saying that all those people who showed up in villain costumes, their mom helped them sew from an ad in the back pages, aren't doing well in this fight scene?
So Eddie flees to another building. His brother gets jacked up by one of Shonuff's henchmen, like the number one henchman of Shonuff's guy. Leroy makes short work of that henchman shortly after. He locks up Richie for safekeeping, and now it's for the big showdown between Shownuff and fucking Leroy.
Oh my god.
My extensive knowledge of kung fu movies can tell you that Shownuff is using tiger style during this, okay? Because it's mostly how the palms are. Right. And it's a little bit of back and forth, so it's a pretty even fight.
Also,
and
he then, really likes water.
Shownuff basically fucking kicks him through a wooden wall, and then Leroy decides to hide, and Shownuff is walking around going, "Leroy, show yourself!"
It's echoing. And then, echoing so scarily.
Fucking, it's fucking reverberating off the sides. And then all of a sudden, fucking Bruce Leroy comes out of the side. Sucker side jump kicks him through a fucking wooden door.
Nice.
And looks like he's fucking knocked out Shownuff. And he's just like, "I did it. I fucking kicked ass.
Killed it.
That's it. That's all I needed
killed
to
it.
Do.
Credits roll. Yeah. Great movie.
End
Thanks
movie.
A lot, guys.
Yeah.
He looks over, though, and Shownuff is gone now.
Oh, my God.
Maybe.
What?
He seemed to just piss him off now.
Wait, did he kick him into vapor?
Yeah, he did. He did kick him into vapor. It was pretty badass what happened. So about this time, I'll let the music start rolling in the background.
Thank you.
Because the Last Dragon theme is actually 8 minutes long, okay? So as we talk about this, I'm just gonna let this roll in the background. Have you ever had a theme song that was 8 minutes long?
Not once.
So Shownuff then unleashes the red glow as his hands start fucking emitting a crimson red out of it. Shownuff starts putting the hurting on him as the energy just spills off of fucking every punch.
We learned that from his master that a great warrior could make only his hands glow.
Yeah.
But only the Last Dragon
could make his whole body glow.
Yeah.
So,
but Leroy is startled to see the glow.
Yeah. I mean, it's a lot to see. I mean, you can't just be like, "I've been searching for the glow this whole time," and then all of a sudden you see the glow because
it's in your enemy.
It's a lot, yeah. This is an intense moment. It's a moment that Kim wants to eat goldfish at because she's so excited.
I have heartburn. It's so exciting. I have heartburn.
It'd be like if I had a comedy battle with Tom Myers and his microphone began to glow. And I was just like, "Ugh!" And I had a rubber chicken with no fortune.
Yeah. The other thing I don't get about this is the whole time that, like, this is the happy theme music. You should only be playing for the hero. This is the song that plays the whole time Leroy is getting his ass whooped. Like, the entire time this is just going on, like...
But it's because we know what's coming.
Yeah.
The energy's in him. The song is in him. Only he doesn't know yet.
I really
love this movie.
It really is fun.
Do you remember in Roadhouse what he says to the bad guy when he's down?
What's that?
"Fuck you."
Yes, it is pretty badass. So it finally gets down to where they're fighting near a...
The bucket of water for some reason.
They're fighting near a giant bucket of water, and Shownuff decides to start doing the classic dunk his head in the water, like, "Say what it is. Who am I?
Who's the master?
Who is the master?"
Noogies,
and
bitch.
He dunks him, and he dunks him, and he dunks him, and every time he gets dunked, he starts to have the little flashbacks of, like, the things that his master said, the things that Vanity said. They're like, "You look like a master to me," and he's like, "Huh, I get it. I am the master."
It'd be great if one of the flashbacks was like, "He's, oh fuck, my toaster's on." Like, just that he sees. Yeah. I'll shut up now.
No, I like the toaster. I like the toaster a lot. So then we get to see this little line, and what you're gonna hear here is the last scene of this fight scene as Shownuff has his head dunked underwater, and Bruce Leroy has come to the realization that he is the master.
Can I point out, though, the other?
"All right, Leroy. The one and only mouth."
I catches his punch. Whoa. And the glow starts all over his body. Crushes his hand.
"Let me go, motherfucker. Let me go."
You are.
Uh-oh, now he's doing the fucking
and this is
cool
the same thing
we
did with the flowers.
Yeah.
Shownuff is standing in front of a transformer, like the power thing. Oh, yeah.
Uh-oh. Shownuff fucking glowing hands are buzzing now. They're running out of juice. Boom! Sidekick, sidekick. Fucking roundhouse off the roundhouse. I like that there's explosions, like those lightsaber fighting with the hands. And then he hits him with a massive jump kick. And that ends Shonuff's reign as the baddest man in Harlem.
I love that roar.
Man, the special effects. Into the tank, where he came to the realization that he is the last dragon.
I love that the other suggested videos are Butterbean kicking some dude's ass and Mitch Hedberg.
YouTube knows me well. They know me too well. Now
you're the Butterbean of Baltimore comedy.
Yeah, thank you. Oh my gosh.
Oh my gosh.
I'm going to get knocked out by Mike Tyson one day. So Eddie then comes over and then shoots fucking Leroy right in the face with a gun.
Jesus.
Fucking shoots him. He goes over to check what he presumes to be Leroy's dead body, and sure enough, Leroy rolls over and he's caught the bullet in his fucking teeth, just like Shonuff said he'd do. Oh my god. So amazing.
This movie is just, it's all ties together with a beautiful bow.
Yeah, yeah. And the final scene is after at the bookend to this movie, it's Vanity looking very sad as she's up in her DJ booth. Aww. Running Seventh Heaven. But then she looks through the crowd at Seventh Heaven and sees on the dance floor, it's Bruce Leroy with flowers.
Oh,
and then as she cuts the music,
and
he goes...
And an all-white kung fu suit.
And an all-white kung fu suit. And then he goes, just as she cuts the music off, he screams, I want you to show me some moves! And we all laugh, and we
He's
had
ready
fun.
To fuck now.
And he continues the entire sentence when the music stops. Like,
but, but Richie stands up for him. He says, hey, that ain't no cornball. That's my brother. Oh, so
wow.
Now he's good friends with his brother.
Full circle, you guys.
Everything is working out. And Vanity and Leroy slowly ascend in the elevator that took her down near the beginning of the movie. They ascend up into the basically the sky, into heaven, and what will surely end in a 2-year marriage.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Yep. And that is the end of The Last Dragon, guys.
Wow.
Ooh, Kimberly, your thoughts, feelings, your concerns.
We can thank this movie for goths, for Daria, for, again, Nirvana, just a lot of darkness, Johnny the Homicidal Maniac, just Invader Zim eventually, just a lot of things that, you know, it just needed to balance the scales a little, bring the hair down, bring the neon lights down a little bit, you know, just kind of let's level the playing field here. You know what's real fashionable right now? The color gray.
Oh,
you know why?
Is.
You know why? Because all those house
because
moms
of Grey's
were wearing
Anatomy.
Well, that and all the house moms were wearing neon for a while.
Mm-hmm.
You always got to bring that balance back around, you know?
You know, yeah, it's like there's sometimes when the Jedi were too strong in Star Wars, the Force was technically unbalanced.
Yes.
Okay?
Yes.
And
yes.
Vader, whether you like him or not, he killed a lot of kids, maybe fucking murdered a bunch of people, brought balance to the Force. Okay?
Yes.
No
not more than a couple
it.
Of planets.
Yeah. And you know, it wasn't a big deal. You have to have the evil with your good. You got
to
have your yin to your yang.
Yeah.
You got to have your peanut butter to your peanut butter and mayonnaise sandwiches.
Stylistically, this is a very extreme version to me of all the 80s stuff going on there.
I like that you're finally acknowledging the incredible power of this film.
I wasn't saying
all
that. That's
culture
generous.
Since has been a reaction to it. Like, this is clearly the pinnacle of what we were going for the first roughly 175,000 years of human civilization.
Yes.
And then since then, we're wearing gray trousers.
It's fair to say that we peaked at this movie. Okay.
Yeah.
The society's only been going down.
I feel
down
like
since
this
then.
Is the kind of movie that if they continued making movies just like this for like 20 years and only like this movie, that's like the years right before 1984, like Orwellian, like where they're like, cut it off, jumpsuits and gray walls, I'm done with it. I can't with the lights and beams and things flying and jawbones. I can't.
I will say that this the Last Dragon is like the movie definitely isn't as good as the book, more than anything. The book was a lot
so much more detail. The dynamics were richer.
Have you seen the traditional Korean play? It's that's really my favorite. It's Buto, I believe. That
you know,
is
it's the original way that we wanted to enjoy it.
If you see it in the spring, they bring in real cherry blossom tree branches. It's so beautiful. They turn the fan on. Oh my God.
Jim, what are your final thoughts on The Last Dragon?
Well, I mean, clearly it is one of my top 10 films of all time.
I enjoy it. I enjoy it.
And I love it. It moves me. It speaks to me. It is probably a big reason I study martial arts. Mm-hmm. It is a big reason that I listen to amazing music.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And it is a big reason why I wish I could wear kung fu pajamas around.
You know, I'll
you
say this.
Can. You're, this is America. You can do what you want.
I'll say this. To each their own. Respect. Mm-hmm. For me, something more motivational is something that was said in Rocky, mm-hmm. which mm-hmm. is, that's what touches me. And we're all different.
I like that Rocky regularized Alzheimer's speech.
Yes. It made it okay.
I was like, there's a boxing champion who talks like that.
It sounds like mumbles. Maybe that's the best recipe for fucking croissants you ever heard in your life. You don't know.
Jim, where can people find you? Look at you? In about in 2 weeks. Not this Monday, but the following Monday.
What's that date?
It would be probably the first week of May.
Weekend I'll be at Magoobie's Joke House May 3rd, 4th, and 5th. Ooh. And if you go online to buy your tickets, Andrew hasn't told me what the code's going to be at. It's either going to be Jim Meyer or Laugh Finder. You will be able to get 4 free tickets. So just try that. Come out and see me. It's going to be great.
And of course, on the Laugh Finder podcast,
which you guys are now a sponsor of.
We are a sponsor of the Laugh Finder.
Both of you have been amazing guests. Eric, you're our only 2-time guest.
Really good. If you guys, by the way, if you're a listener of Quality Time, if you're a Quality Timer out there, check out the Laugh Finder podcast. It's very fun. It's the piezo based
role playing
RPG game where you get to hear Wendell the Space Pig.
I'm Captain Dr. Wendell.
Yeah.
The Space Pig.
I didn't know we were going to get Captain Wendell on the show. Oh my God.
Yes, well, it's good to be here.
Right now?
I'm on book tour, and you know, every time I'm in whatever the fuck we are, I like to be on Quality Time. This is my favorite place in Pikesville.
And you guys have a big show that's out right now. I mean, if I'm not mistaken, with Brian Posehn.
Yeah, Brian Posehn's episode will drop a week before this one does. So check that out. Going to be on. It was really cool having Brian Posehn in my basement. He's still there.
Fuck yeah. Yeah, he's not left. He's chained him down there.
That was awesome. And he had a good time. So that's cool. And if you like, it's me, 3 other comedians, role playing with a local NPR guy, and an audio
mancer. Aaron Hankin is great on the show.
And Tommy Zimbazo, I know, has been on your show.
I just finished the Andrew Unger episodes, and they were phenomenal. So mm-hmm. yeah, it was awkward. It got weird,
It definitely got weird.
It was fun though.
And Aaron slept on my floor for quite some time.
As an insider and a sponsor, I've gotten the inside track. So
he can use a sponsor.
It feels good. Kimberly, where can people find you?
I'm on Instagram at Panic at the Deli. I'm on Twitter at Watch Me Doing This. And if you come to the Auto Bar the second Saturday of every month, you can see me for free at the second Saturday Shit Show.
Yeah, actually, I'm headlining
in September.
So if you're in around Baltimore, I'm filming and I'm doing a whole bunch of shit for that.
Yeah,
so you guys
girl.
Should come up. Set your September for the second Saturday. Hop on the iTunes, hop on the Stitcher, give us a 5-star review so we can read it on the show. Thank you, everybody, for listening to The Last Dragon. Tune in because guess what? May is Mel Gibson May. Get fucking ready. God bless you and have a good night.
It's funny because I actually slowed it down so it almost sounds legit. like